This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
For many of us, our dogs are our furry children, right? We treat them as such. But what you may not realize is scientifically, they're more like human children than we may even know. Wendy Lyon Sunshine is an award-winning journalist and author of a new book called Tender Paws: How Science-Based Parenting Can Transform Our Relationships with Dogs. And it is a very, very interesting book. She's going to tell us more about this, but it was inspired by the struggles that she faced when she and her husband adopted a new puppy. And it was informed by her work with child development experts. So there's a lot of interesting information to unpack here. I want to learn more about this. I think that there's going to be information that could be very helpful for all of us with our dogs, no matter what the age. So I'm very excited to welcome Wendy to the podcast today to share her knowledge and expertise. But we're going to take a short break from our sponsor. You're listening to the Pet Health Coach on Pet Life Radio. I'm Jody L. Teich, your host. When we come back, you'll meet Wendy, so grab that favorite healthy beverage, get cozy, and we'll be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Pet Health Coach on Pet Life Radio, and I'm Jody Teich, your host. I have a really wonderful guest today. Her name is Wendy Lyon Sunshine, and she's the award-winning author, journalist, of a new book, Tender Paws: How Science-Based Parenting Can Transform Our Relationship with Dogs. It's interesting how she came to this and what it was inspired by. So without further ado, I want to introduce Wendy so we can unpack all these beautiful tidbits that can be helpful to us as pet parents. Welcome, Wendy.
Thanks so much, Jody. I'm so excited to be here and speak with you. Your interest in the holistic approach to dog welfare is very near and dear to my heart. So I'd be happy to explain a little bit about how I came to write this book.
Yeah, I think I want to sort of set the stage for our listeners. Can you tell them a little bit about your background and how you got into the world of child behavior, which is what informed what you ended up doing with the dog that you and your husband adopted and then begot this book?
Yes, thanks. Yeah, I stumbled into it, as many of us do. Some of the best journeys start inadvertently. I was working as a reporter and freelance writer in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and a wonderful editor invited me to do a profile on some professors who were child development experts at Texas Christian University. And they were succeeding with children who had problems where that it seemed nobody could help them, but they had found ways, and they were running programs, particularly something called the Hope Connection Camp. And they focused on adoptive families, children perhaps from overseas with backgrounds of abuse or trauma. Perhaps they had been through the child protective system. And so they really needed to bring their best game to help these children. And when I wrote profile of them, I was so intrigued by their work, and we clicked. And by the end of the process, they had invited me to help them write a book. And I became like an honorary graduate student. You know, they personally taught me so much. And I got to witness things firsthand. And I was immersed in this world of wonder and possibility, which later bailed me out with my own puppy, actually, surprisingly enough.
Well, it's really, what an incredible opportunity to work alongside two people who are experts in a space that I think is affecting more and more parents of human children than ever, between on the various places on the spectrum, autism, and just children who have trouble acclimating to life. So it was very interesting for me in your book to see the parallels that you found when you adopted this puppy named Hazel. If you were to kind of look at, well, first, tell us about the inspiration for Tender Paws. Let's do that next so that people can understand that it came from your own challenges with the puppy.
Sure. Yeah, like everybody, we brought home this little creature with the best of intentions, and we found her through the shelter system. In fact, she wasn't in the shelter. She was with the foster family in a home because she was really too young to be in the shelter. It was risk to her and her litter mates. And the litter had come from a stray dog that the mother ran away when they rescued the puppies. So we really had no clue what the implications of those circumstances were. We just said, oh, and it was a beautiful little circumstance. My husband and I went to visit the litter, and most of the litter ignored us. But one little creature tottered over, climbed into my husband's lap, curled up, and went to sleep. And we thought, well, I guess she picked us. So here we are. And it started out promising. But what happened was, once we sorted out her physical ailments, because there were a number, she turned out she had worms. She had anemia from the worms. So she had some challenges. And those had affected her growth and development. And once that system started, boy, we were in for a shock.
What did you find?
I was in for the shock because I like to call it like she was shot out of a cannon every morning. It was like this explosion of energy and growth and discovery of the world. But what that means for a puppy is very, can mean a lot of teeth on you and a lot of claws and a lot of chasing the cats and a lot of chaos in the house. And honestly, I was at my wit's end. I really, you know, every night, late at night, my husband, the night owl, would snuggle with the puppy on the couch, but all the real raising and the teaching was falling to me.
Yeah.
So I was like, whoa. And I made some choices I wasn't proud of. And I thought, you know what? I'm not qualified to deal with this puppy. I want the best for her, but like this is above my pay grade. So I proposed to my husband, let's bring her back. I had this great idea. We're going to bring her back to the shelter because she's still young and she's, you know, maybe somebody else will take her who's more qualified because I'm not qualified. Like, I don't know what I'm doing and this is not working out. Well, you know, he kind of bonded with this puppy. He likes snuggling with her.
He got all the fun stuff.
He had the fun stuff. And I was stuck because he was not going to green light that. So I really, you know, I had a few moments of extreme panic and freak out. And then I had this moment where I thought, you know, I'm like this parent of this toddler who's like got teeth, you know, it just is. And I just helped write a book for parents who are struggling.
You ding, made that connection ding. Finally out of desperation.
Yeah. Right. Really. Because the puppy guides, the manuals that I had taken home, you know, they were good to the point, but they were not helping me get to the heart of why I was struggling with this dog. And so going back to the parenting book really was an eye opener. And it's weird because I knew the book, I'd helped write it, right? But I looked at it and I came to it with really fresh approach. And started to ask myself some of the questions that the lead author, the wonderful late Karen Purvis, she would point out, you know, what is this behavior really saying? And what does this child really need? Because behavior is just an attempt to communicate and get your needs met. And I got an inspiration from the book to try what I call a do-over, or a redo is what she calls it. And it was just a way to reset, to start the interaction fresh.
Yeah, I mean, the heart core of this book is based on what's called the heart's principle, right? So, and it's wonderful. So tell my listeners a little bit about what that is that you revisited that right. sort of fueled your new approach with Hazel.
Right. Well, in my book, I call it HEARTS. I use the acronym HEARTS because it kind of boils down all the best practices that are from the Connected Child book and other parenting books. And it's an easy way to help me remember it too. And the first H is for heal the body. And this is something that's so familiar to you, right? For example, if you're not getting the right nutrition or, you know, if there's some illness or you've got a toothache, you know, it's going to affect your behavior. So that's the bottom line. You start there. So H is for heal the body. E is for engage and optimize the brain. And this is has so many dimensions. It's quite amazing because everything from movement can affect your brain, sensory interaction with the environment. For the dogs, it could be chewing and playing and digging. But for children, it's also sensory and touch and movement. So we have H, heal the body, E, engage and optimize the brain. A is appropriate environments with felt safety. And I think of the dog of your own you were telling me about where struggled in one environment, you moved it to another environment, and now it's happy and you know, thriving. Yeah. And this is true for children. It's true for dogs and puppies. So we have H, E, A, R is for respectful and secure relationships because we need other people. We need other creatures. Dogs need social interaction. Children need help from caring adults. All those things build trust. They also set up our nervous system for very optimal outcomes. And that's so vital. So that R is respectful and secure relationships. Then we have T, which is teach sensitively and positively. And so you could think of it for dog world, it's training sensitively and positively. It's you're helping them learn in a way that's appropriate to the individual. It's very custom. And positive reinforcement, we're making it rewarding and enjoyable. And that works for kids and it works for dogs. And finally, the S is support the individual because each individual has their own quirks and needs. It's whether they're, for example, where they are in their developmental stages. A puppy needs something different than an older dog, but also they have different aptitudes. You were also talking about your terrier with that terrier energy and got to run and chase and find and dig and get the little critters. And that's different, for example, than certain other dogs, like guard dogs who are more happy to just observe and just stay tranquil until the time comes for action. So we want to support the individual, just like children. They may have some special needs of certain kinds. As long as we are approaching all these things with all our hearts, right, we can give the best outcomes.
Absolutely. And it's such a comprehensive heart-based, you know, sort of protocol or series of principles that, you know, you work from. I want to unpack it a little bit. As a health coach for people and pets, I coach multidimensionally. And so it's body, mind, spirit, soul, because it's all connected. If you dial down to biology, the vagus nerve connecting the brain and the gut, it's a hotline. They talk all day long. And 80% of that serotonin and 80% of the immune system, it all is happening in your gut. But yet, it affects how you feel. So when I coach, yes, nutrition is the foundation of the house, and nutrition can affect, whether it's a person or a pup, can affect aggression, anxiety, and how they engage in the world. But the concept of bioindividuality, which comes out in your heart's principles, is so critical. Different stages of life, absolutely. Different aptitudes, absolutely. Different breeds or kinds of breeds within them, that has bearing, I found, as well as energetically, you know, the environment that they live in, the environment that they were born in, or maybe they lived in during that period of time when it was so important to socialize them, that, you know, 6 to 14 weeks or So there's so many facets, and I would love for you to speak on the bioindividuality component of this, because I think that the respectfulness, which, you know, I wanted to talk with you about too, there's a place within bioindividuality for that too, respecting their individuality, that they are not just a dog or a cookie cutter dog behavior.
Well, one of the reasons we love our dogs so much is because of their individual personalities.
Yes.
That's part of their charm. And so we can appreciate that and we can honor that through some of the choices we make. But it's very interesting, because you touched on this a little, is that even the prenatal experience of an animal and a child can affect what happens and what they're set up for life. For example, for children whose mother is highly stressed during pregnancy, that can make it harder for them to regulate their emotions and their reactions to the world. And for dogs, there are toxics. And I mean, it's same for children too. They could be exposed to some chemical in the environment that unfortunately trips the wire. They call it epigenetics, but it's, you know, it has implications for the way their genes are expressed and how, what that means. I mean, really, it's quite extraordinary. So you start with that, and that's where you become the individual with your genetics and that environment interaction. And then you have learning as you go through the through your life, and your environment and the nurturing you receive, and all of that, and your natural aptitudes and talents, because just like children have talents, dogs have talents. Sometimes they're like superheroes to me. Like my dog has a super power of recognizing a raccoon, no matter where he is in the neighborhood. It's like, really? Thank you very much. Okay,
ding, ding,
yeah,
ding,
we
ding,
got
ding.
It.
Yeah, I totally hear you. We really need to be detectives for our animals, for our pets, because observing like a detective might, digging deeper. I was listening to an expert on autism in children speak this morning, and her talk was focused a lot on heavy metals. And you mentioned about toxicity in the environment. My God, how you can't avoid it. None of us can. And our dogs have four on the floor, right? So they're directly into their bloodstream. So yeah, there's so much that's involved on a bioindividual level that I think affects how they behave, how they think, how they respond to their environment, and how trainable they can be. And knowing to look, you know, sort of beneath the surface, I think is critical. I thought it was really interesting in your book that you said there was a statistic that 80%, vets said 80%, or someone said 80% of aggression, was it, could be linked to a pain of some kind?
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah.
Right. It was between 30 and up to 80% of cases that were referred to behavioral veterinarians.
Mm.
And they, you know, traced back on their case studies and found that this enormous majority of cases, the dog had some level of pain that once that was resolved, there was tremendous improvement in the behavior. Understandably, we're all cranky if we don't feel well, but they can't tell us. They can't
exactly
say, oh, you know, I pulled a muscle in my back. Would you please quit pushing on that spot? Or, you know, I'm getting tired, my neck, from looking up at you when I'm healing. Can we do something different, please? They can't say that. They just kind of show from their discomfort in different ways. And that bioindividuality is so much. I was thinking about senses, and the sense of smell is so strong in dogs that some things that we think are pleasing to the human nose, like certain fragrances or room fresheners and all, that can, you know, that they can react differently to that too. It's not one size fits all. And some of them, it's hard for them to, I guess, tolerate it because we don't really realize it's bothering them. That's so tricky.
Exactly. This leads beautifully into a story you share in the book, very well known. You know, a lot of you listening will probably recognize her name. Dog trainer, holistic dog trainer, Victoria Stilwell, shared a story about a dog named Marley. Would you share that with us?
Sure. Yeah. Victoria Stilwell just shared this wonderful story. She was called in on a case with a little cockapoo, I believe it was, who was humping like crazy. You should excuse me, but this dog, that's what the facts were. And that's what she was called in for. And this little dog had a guardian who was very caring and tried to do the very best for this dog. So she would take Marley out to the playground, to the dog park every morning and try to throw the Frisbee over and over. And then she would take it home to a busy household and, you know, have it interact with the people. But Marley just was kept humping her leg. No matter what she did, she would take it to the park. It was humping at home. He was humping her leg. And Victoria came in and started to look closely at what was really going on here. And a conventional trainer might say, okay, we got to stop this right away and maybe get tough with that humping. A positive trainer might say, well, what can we have the dog do instead of humping? But Victoria wanted to look deeper than both of those and say, well, what is the dog trying to express and what's really going on here? And she came away believing that Marley was trying to express that he just wasn't happy. He was uncomfortable and he really didn't want to be there chasing that Frisbee. That was not a place where he felt comfortable. And this is how he was trying to express it. And not only that, she noticed by careful, you know, becoming a detective, by careful looking, she noticed Marley kept looking over his shoulder and it seemed like he was looking at his back portion of his body. And she said to the guardian, I really suggest you take him to the veterinarian. There might be something going on with his hips in the back. He's looking. Well, it turned out he had hip dysplasia. So all that running and chasing was actually extremely painful for him. And he was giving a cry for help. And as soon as she, you know, Victoria suggested that Marley's guardian change their whole routine, none of this Frisbee stuff, instead a nice, long, relaxed, sniffy walk in nature on a lead where Marley could set the pace. And the humping just went away of its own very quickly once all that was resolved.
That is such a powerful story because they're constantly communicating with us in so many ways if we know what to look for and we pay attention, right?
Exactly. That's the biggest challenge for us humans. We don't always get what they're trying to say. And that's a wonderful gift we can give our dogs is to learn a little bit more about what dog body language is and just even pay attention, a little mindfulness and practice that every day, just a few minutes a day, get in the habit and you'll realize how much your dog is communicating to you. It's quite marvelous, really.
It really is. It really is. We are going to take a short break from our sponsor, but when we come back, we are going to talk about different parenting styles. There are different styles, specific styles. Which one are you? So don't go away. Refresh that beverage. Get comfortable, and we'll be right back.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand only from Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Pet Health Coach on Pet Life Radio, and I'm Jody Teich, your host. We're here today with Wendy Lyon Sunshine, the award-winning journalist and author of a new book called Tender Paws, How Science-Based Parenting Can Transform Our Relationships with Dogs. We're unpacking some really wonderful, powerful, helpful information for us pet parents. So one thing that I want to talk with Wendy about is parenting styles. In the book, there are specific ones. And when you read the book, you can identify which one might be you. You want to talk about that a little bit, Wendy?
Sure, Jody. I'd be happy to. Yeah, scientists use this. They like to categorize parenting styles into four basic categories. And it's super helpful way to think about some of the choices that we make and even to think back the way we were parented, right?
which makes a huge difference, as you can share from the book too.
Right.
The dog trainers. Yeah.
Exactly. And that philosophy and that approach influences choices we make with our children, with our dogs. And these four styles have varying levels of what's called demandingness. In other words, how much I insist on you behave a certain way, and versus how much I'm going to cater to you and what you want and your particular, choices and preferences. So various combinations give us different styles. So we have, on one end of the spectrum, we have what would be basically neglectful, because they're not really paying attention to, you know, your needs. They're just checked out and there's not much involvement. And sometimes there are legitimate reasons. Maybe the parent's really busy and working a lot, but the fact is they still aren't really interacting so much and supporting the little one so much. Then you'll have a permissive style. And many of us have, like, I think of my grandmother, who always had the treat I wanted whenever I visited.
Mine too.
And so that's an indulgent style, right? There aren't so many guidelines, but there's pretty much whatever you want. It's not neglectful in the physical sense usually, but it lacks a certain amount of structure. And perhaps the child doesn't get the practice they might need in conforming to expectations in certain situations, because they always get their own way, right? So it's that permissive style can be pretty indulgent. Now, if you want to go to the far end on the other side, you have what would be called authoritarian, which is just like it sounds. It's the parent that's like, okay, you know, my way or the highway, you do things my way, it's because I said so, and that's it. and that's, they set the tone, and they're really not focusing so much on what feedback they're getting from the little one, whether it's a child or a dog. It's more about what the parent wants and expects, and everything else is sort of secondary. So that's another extreme. Where you get the best long-term outcomes is where you combine the two into what's called authoritative, and I like to call it therapeutic parenting, because authoritative and authoritarian can get kind of similar sounding. But this therapeutic approach, this authoritative approach, it combines the best of both. It combines giving as much as you can in a suitable, appropriate way, but also setting those expectations and limits so that the little one actually helps them feel safe, because they know what is expected in a situation. It also keeps them physically safe sometimes, because they can't go running around willy-nilly. And yet, it also nourishes them in an emotional and physical and sensory way. So you're combining the very best of both in that authoritative or therapeutic approach. And we can each think back probably to different experiences we may have had with these different styles, whether in our own family or what we've seen. But it's food for thought as to how we approach situations.
Absolutely. And I'm wondering, with those listening, do you recognize aspects of maybe a couple of them in you? Because I would imagine that there are many people who, depending on the day, depending on the circumstance, different emotions, things come up, and maybe there are sort of crossovers of different styles that show up in, you know, this animal's life and experience. Do you find that too, Wendy?
Absolutely, absolutely. But the good news is we don't have to be 1,000% perfect all the time. There is wiggle room, and there's a little bit of forgiveness for all of us. But we want to trend toward what we prefer, what we feel is most beneficial, as much as we can. And we'll course correct if we need to. It's just part of the journey of parenting.
Yes, exactly. One aspect of that kind of supportive parenting is this concept of respecting our pets, not demanding respect, which there are certain methods of training that have been around a very long time that do that. You overpower the animal, you're the leader, but really respecting our pets for the individuals with their own needs, thoughts, and feelings that they are, and then what we encourage back. So these loving boundaries with respect. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. In a way, it boils down to a bit of the golden rule, right? You know, do unto others as you would want them to do unto you. And so, for example, I don't want to be dragged around by the neck. So I don't really want to drag my dog around by the neck. I don't want somebody grabbing food off my plate. So I try not to grab food off of my dog's plate. And even comes to things like being touched and hugged, especially if you come out of a trauma situation or a rescue situation. We think of children who have been abused or traumatized. You want to really respect their personal space. You want consent for touch. But also, the therapist often will use one hand to touch so that they don't overpower them and make them feel trapped for the child. And we can do the same for a dog, for example. We can use one hand and stroke kindly with one hand, but the dog knows he can get away. You know, we're not backing him in the corner where maybe this is overwhelming to them. So respecting personal space and respecting consent as much as possible. I know with the veterinarian, you know, you sometimes have to say, sorry, we can't. You're going to have to put up with this a little bit right now.
I just had to do that yesterday with my poor Chihuahua. So yes, we do sometimes. Yes.
It's like us going to the dentist, right? We're not too keen on it.
Yes, exactly.
But we can be respectful. And if we just think of it like a family member or somebody we really respect and admire, and we want to invite them into our home, we would treat them with deference and care. And we can do the same, you know, for the animals in our care.
Yeah, I think the idea of personal space is really an important one. I like to share with my pet parents who I coach to let the dog lead. And this is true for your own animals as well as a new dog that you may meet. Let them lead. If they want your attention, they will show you that they want your attention. They'll come up next to you and they'll, you know, one step short of actually talking to you, ask to be pet or come sit in your lap or cuddle up next to you. If they don't want to be touched, then let them have their space. And, you know, that is to me an important part of respect, especially if you're meeting an animal for the first time. You know, there are some people who have great intentions, but they go right in there, you know, and then sometimes they get bitten.
Right.
Or they traumatize the animal. But I think it also has a place with our own animals too, because just like us, there are days when we're like happy, happy, joy, joy, and we're out there and we want to, you know, play and have fun and we feel very affectionate. And there are days when we really want our space, you know, we, you know, don't necessarily want to be cuddled and pet if I was a dog. So, you know, I think that kind of letting them lead is also something. Do you find that as well with your experience?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you can let them come to you, that's ideal. They'll speak to you. Like you say, sometimes they'll lean up against you. Sometimes they'll just put their face right on your, you know, on your leg. But likewise, it's interesting to note, we can also become attentive to little signs like, are they turning their head away when you approach? Are they turning their head away? And that's a sign that they're trying to politely decline. It's like at a party where somebody's coming over and you go, oh dear, I don't know what to say to them. I'm going to just go check my phone right now.
Yeah, exactly.
And suddenly, if the dog is suddenly interested elsewhere, when you're approaching, they're trying to be polite. They're trying to say, thank you, but not now. This is not right for me.
Exactly. The last thing that I want to talk to you about, I thought was very interesting. The idea about in play, the benefits of the dog playing with a doll and the sort of bridge between what it does for children, young children, and what it does for dogs. Can you get into that a little bit, the scientific benefits found?
Sure. Well, there are actually many different types of play. So, and there's something called like free play, where the child gets to direct the play, and that's super helpful. There's studies about helping self-regulation and brain development. You have relational play between parent and child or two people. And the doll play is interesting because they've done studies that show that the same part of the brain is activated with doll play, like for children, as with the relational play with another child. So there's a social aspect, a social benefit. But for dogs, especially too, the doll has some wonderful additional benefits. If you happen to have a puppy who's full of that puppy energy and going haywire, and there's no other dog that is around or no other dog who wants to play with them because it's an older dog saying, I've had enough, can you please leave me be? That doll, and I call it a doll, but it's like could be a real life-size stuffed dog doll standing, for example.
Interesting.
You put them together, and it's so interesting. You know, it doesn't work for every dog, but so many dogs really love it. They'll sniff the rump, they'll look around, and then they'll start to tackle it and bite on it and wrestle with it. And they can get a lot of that juice out, you know, in a safe, appropriate manner. And you don't have to worry that it's going to teach them that they should be attacking everything. Like, they know the difference. The dog course. Actually gets it. And sometimes you'll find that the dog will learn to go for that doll himself. Like, you don't always have to direct him there. He will start to realize, oh, this is an outlet for me. I'm ready. I want to play. So let me go get my stuffed doll. And it has turned around a number of situations. It's delightful. And it's fun it's just fun. It gives that developmental benefit, just like for kids.
Yes, absolutely. And what fun for the dog, a wrestle that you always win.
That's right. And never says no.
Never says no. Exactly. Wendy, where can people find you?
Yes. My website is wendylsunshine.com. And my book is Tender Paws. And that's available from all the retailers and on Audible as well.
Yes. And for those of you listening who have young children or have young grandchildren, the two books that Wendy wrote with these expert collaborators, one is a classic award-winning book called The Connected Child, and the other is called Raising the Challenging Child. So you can seek those out. They can get that through your website as well, Wendy?
Well, they're listed there too, and it'll connect them over. So certainly, yes.
Perfect. So again, Wendy's book, Tender Paws, How Science-Based Parenting Can Transform Our Relationship with Dogs. Thank you so much for being with me today, Wendy.
Thank you so much, Jody. It was a delight talking with you.
Oh, thanks. And thank you all for listening. As a certified health coach for people and pets, my mission is to share holistic healing guidance for the whole family to create vibrant, good health. So tune in next time for information, expert interviews, and tips to give the animals we love the longest and most vibrant life we can. I'm Jody L. Teich, and this is The Pet Health Coach.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.